Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers. I'm your host, Rodney Mathers. I'm so glad that you could be with us this week. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Today, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the recidivism rate of sex offenders. And the reason we're going to do this is because most people think that that number is high. And I'm going to show you some studies and give you some information and facts that prove that those numbers are not high. And I want you to know about that because we do have some SOs that listen to the program and their family and friends might be interested in this information. We're also going to take a little bit of time to do a Rodney rant, which we call around here. Some things have been increasingly bothering me about some information that I'm seeing on the internet, and I want to share that with you as well. All that's going to be coming up right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all, love getting mail from you. You can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney@yahoo.com. Drop me a line. Spend a little bit of time today talking about the recidivism rate of sex offenders. And I wanted to do this because we do have SOs that listen to the show. Everybody is entitled to a second chance, and we don't judge people here. What we do is present information to help people be successful when they return from their incarceration. And it doesn't matter to me what the crime was. And I've always heard that the recidivism rate of sex offenders was probably not as high as what the general public perceived. And I was able to find some information in a magazine called Scientific America. This magazine is the 2011 winner of the General Excellence Awards for magazines. This is some good information here, and as we all know, sex crimes they evoke a strong feeling in people, and the feeling's usually revulsion and repugnance. And it's perhaps not surprising that people misunderstand the nature of what's going on with sex cases. The public, whose opinions are reinforced by portrayals in the media and in popular culture, believe that sex offenders will almost always repeat their predatory acts in the future, and this is not the case. We learn in this particular article that this is absolutely not the case. The truth is not so cut and dried, and it gives us cause for hope in these kinds of cases. And before I discuss these beliefs, there's a few basic things that are in order to present. The two most common types of sex offenses are rape and child molestation. Now, child molestation is very ugly sounding, but you know, there are a lot of people that go to prison out there that are 21 and have sex with their 16 or 17 year old girlfriend, and they fall under this category as well. I met men like that when I was incarcerated. In most cases, the victim, usually female, knows the perpetrator, generally male, and by some estimates, one third or more of all sex offenders are under the age of 18, which is a very surprising statistics to me, with some even as young as 5 years. Most begin to offend sexually in adolescence. Now, what does the research tell us about common beliefs? First, the notion that recidivism, which when we say recidivism, we mean repeat offending, is inevitable. We need to take a second look at that. Recently, sex crimes researcher by the name of Jill Levinson of Lynn University in Florida and her colleagues found that the average member of the general public believes that 75% of sex offenders will reoffend. This perception is consistent with media portrayals and such television programs as Law and Order Special Victims Unit, in which sex offenders are almost always portrayed as chronic repeaters. The evidence suggests otherwise, according to this article and the research done by Jill Levinson. Sex crimes researcher R. Carl Hansen and Kelly E. Morton Bergen of Public Safety Canada conducted a large-scale meta-analysis, which is a quantitative review of recidivism rates among adult sex offenders, and they found that 14% over a period averaging 5 to 6 years reoffended. Recidivism rates increased over time, reaching 24% by 15 years. The figures are clearly out of alignment with the public's more dire expectations. Everybody seems to think that once a sex offender, always a sex offender, and this research proves that that is not true. Also, contrary to media depictions, most offenders do not specialize in one type of sex crime. Most are generalist, which is a term used by these researchers. These are people who engage in a variety of sex and non-sexual crimes as well. Hansen and Morton Bergen found that sex offenders had a total recidivism rate for both sex crimes and non-sexual or violent crimes of approximately 36% over a period of 5 to 6 years. Nevertheless, the perpetrators of different types of sex crimes exhibit varying rates of repeat offending. The 15-year recidivism rate is 13% for incest perpetrators and 24% for rapists and 35% for child molesters of boy victims. So the different type of crime has a correlation to a different length or percentage number of recidivism. And I think that even the low numbers of 24 and 35% are something that might be surprising to the general public. It's only 13%. And I say only, but it's a lot better than 14%. The 13% for incest perpetrators is a number that was declared by this particular research. When providing clarifications about the lower than generally acknowledged rates of recidivism, let's don't oversimplify the recidivism research is difficult. And I've learned as I've done a little bit of research on recidivism this week that the numbers, and I got to say this in all honesty, the numbers tend to fluctuate due to the study. So, for instance, although average rates tell us what percentage reoffends one or more times, we need to be aware that a subset reoffends at a frighteningly higher rate. In addition, there are reasons to think that published findings underestimate the true rates. Most research necessarily omits those offenders who were not detected and arrested or whose victims did not report the crime. Further, many sex offenders plea bargain down to a non-sexual offense. I bet they don't do that in Texas. Still, there are other reasons to believe that recidivism rates may not be that different from what researchers have found. Now, this is an important statement here. This comes straight out of the magazine article. Let me read it again. Still, there are other reasons to believe that recidivism rates may not be that different from what researchers have found. So, despite all the information I said about the gray area of the numbers, these researchers found that their numbers correlated to what they were actually seeing in terms of arrest, time served, people coming out of incarceration and being followed for study. The frequent offenders are more likely than other offenders to be caught. Many safeguards probably help to keep the recidivism rate in check. Sex offenders released on probation are closely monitored, and those considered to be at high risk for recidivism rate are required to register with authorities. These registries are distributed to law enforcement personnel. Finally, states are legally required to publicly identify high-risk sex offenders. The Department of Justice coordinates a website that enables anyone to search for the identity and location of known offenders, and they're saying in the article that that helps the recidivism rate, just the fact that people know that they're being watched, I suppose. And taking the research and its limitations into account, it's likely that the public's belief that very high recidivism rates are well documented, that is absolutely incorrect. Although this verdict may change in the future, and we hope that people, especially employers, learn the realities of recidivism among sex offenders. If recidivism is not common, as people generally believe, how do their impressions of treatment's failure or success hold up? Now, Levinson, one of the parties to the study, and her colleagues also found that a whopping 50% of the public believes that treatment for sex offenders is ineffective and will not prevent them from relapsing. Yet some studies have shown that treatment can significantly reduce recidivism for both sex and non-sexual crimes. Hansen and his colleagues conducted a meta-analysis on treatment and found that 17% of untreated subjects reoffended, whereas 10% of treated subjects did reoffend. Now, let's look at that for just a second. How many people who go to prison on non-sexual crimes reoffend? Drug offenders and so forth. Do you think that number is higher than 10%? I can guarantee you that it is. So this 10% number for sex offenders who are released and go through treatment is absolutely outstanding. And I would like for every employer out there to know that number. I would like for the family members of sex offenders and the friends and loved ones of sex offenders to know that number, because it's not the frightening scenario that you probably have painted in your head through popular culture and, like we've mentioned, TV shows and so forth. It's 10%. If they've gone through treatment. And I submit to you, not being an expert by any means, but just using my common sense, that that number is lower than people who commit other sorts of crimes to go to prison. The advantage for treatment over non-treatment does not appear to be that large, because the meta-analysis group studies studied together, masked the fact that some of them found fairly large effects of treatment and others found smaller or no effects. But the results of the meta-analysis also suggest that we might be making progress. More recent studies show significantly larger treatment benefits than do the older studies. So I want to go back to this 10% number. That is amazing. And that is the thing that I wanted to share with you today. That 10% number, sex offenders who are treated, found by these three researchers to have a 10% recidivism rate. Let's get that number out to everybody that's in a position to hire offenders, okay? All right, we're going to come back with more right after this. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. y'all. It's me again. Are you being productive with your downtime? We talk about this every week. I hope that you are. It's a good way to keep from getting into trouble. And one of the things that I do is I play a little music. I'm not very good at it, but I've worked at it. And one of the things that's helped me is something called the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. The Jam Buddy Chord Chart is a chart that uses something called the Nashville numbering system, and it enables you, despite your instrument, it doesn't matter what the instrument is, it can be a guitar, a bass, a banjo, a piano, an accordion, you can play a song in any key with the use of this chart. It's called the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. You find it at angiesbanjo.com. That's angiesbanjo.com. You click on the link for the Jam Buddy Chord Chart and you're going to get a free sample. It'll give you a whole page so you can take a look at it, and I guarantee you're going to want to buy it. And I also want to tell you that 100% of the profits of the Jam Buddy Chord Chart come right back to the Journey of Hope with Rodney Mathers to help with the upkeep of the podcast equipment and to pay the hosting fee on Podbean. So you're making a contribution to the show when you buy the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. All the money goes to the podcast. It's a great way to help you improve your music. It's at angiesbanjo.com. It's called the Jam Buddy Chord Chart. Welcome back. You know, every couple of weeks I search the internet to see what is new out there in the world of help for ex-offenders. And I just got to tell you, I've been putting this off for a long time, but I'm going to go ahead and do it on this particular podcast. I'm increasingly appalled at the number of people that want to charge money to ex-offenders for their help. I go to some of these sites, some of these blogs, and all I see are ads. There's no content there. It's or very little content, and there's just advertisements. I'm never pay, for example, let me tell you about this one. Never pay an employment agency up front for their services. Don't ever, ever do that. Now, like I tell you guys all the time, I'm no expert, doctor, lawyer, astronaut. I'm none of that. I'm just a guy who's got some advice here. But employment agencies for ex-offenders seem to be popping up more and more, and they all want money up front. That's not a good idea, because you don't need to do that. That, you know, it makes you wonder, what are they doing that for? Well, they're doing it to make a buck. They're not doing it to help you get a job. And I've actually turned down advertising from people who wanted, or one particular guy that wanted to advertise on this podcast, and he had a business like that for ex-offenders, but you had to pay up front. No way was I going to do that. To me, it's just not ethical, and I believe it's a ripoff. Now, I'm also seeing blogs and on-air type shows, other podcasts and radio shows that are full of advertising, and this bothers me too. And you know, once again, we've turned down advertisers here. Now, we do advertise the Jam Buddy Chord Chart, and we do that because 100% of the sales are donated to the show in the form of equipment, and it also goes to pay the we're hosted on Podbean, and that costs about $250 a year to keep on the air. And we have some pretty nice equipment here so that the podcast is enjoyable and entertaining. And there's upkeep on, you know, cables and cords and this and that. And we don't make we don't make enough money off the sale of the Jam Buddy Chord Chart to pay for the things that we need for the podcast. And nobody puts a penny in their pocket here. Now, excuse me, we do have on this podcast authors that want to sell you a book. But let me explain how that works, okay, so that you've got a good understanding of this and so that other people have got a good understanding of this. Now, we used to just put almost anyone on the show when we first started over a couple of years ago. We absolutely do not do that anymore. I mean, we were just thrilled back in the early days to have a guest. But we are very, very selective now. We get dozens of requests a month, and we just don't need to put people on to fill time. And we have some rules that we follow here with before I'll let an author come on here and try to sell their book. First of all, they got to have something relevant. Okay. You know, somebody that, you know, wants to talk about how to grow roses isn't going to be on my show. It has to be something relevant to ex-offenders. And no author for about the past year now, no author gets on this show without sending me a hard copy of their book. Now, I don't want an ebook. I don't want email attachments with two chapters. I want to sit on my couch, and we've been doing this for about a year now. I want to sit on my couch and use a highlighter and a pen and make notes. So what results when the author is interviewed on this show is you, the listener, get the meat of the book. And you have the choice whether to buy it or not. Now, I've heard that some authors have sold some books on the show, and then I've had other authors tell me that they didn't sell any book. I could care less. What I want to do is to get the listener the meat from the book because I feel like it's relevant. And, you know, we're only going to put people on here that have something relevant to say. I'm going to give you the thrust and the meat of the book, and then it's up to you whether you wanted to buy it or not. What we don't have here and we'll never have is a web page that sells a magazine for $20 a month plus $10 shipping and handling. And sells advertising space for $250 for 3 months of advertising. I'm not going to name who that is, but I can tell you I should have known when I had the owner of that magazine. They call themselves the editor, but they're really an owner because they're running a business. I had that person on the show one time, and that person I'm being careful not to say he or she, but that person rescheduled about three times, which is red flag number one. And then red flag number two is they finally call in for the interview, but they're sitting in the drive-thru of McDonald's, and they want me to wait while they order their McRib or whatever. So, you know, there's red flag number two. But as I got to, you know, I had this person on the show, and this was back in the days when, you know, we just were wanting to get guests. And this is an example of why we don't do that anymore and we're so selective. That person, when I started really digging in and looking at what they were doing, totally all about making money, even though they're catering to ex-offenders and their family. And I just think it's absolutely appalling. And if I could take the show back, I would. But and that's the kind of site that I see and the kind of business that I see that just seems to be popping up more and more on the internet. And, you know, you have to wonder. And I remember asking that person on the air, well, what is your experience with prison? Well, I had a nephew that did 18 months in the county. Oh, come on, man. But you run a magazine that's geared towards ex-offenders and their families. What do you know about prison? You know, so you got to wonder what someone like that, what their purpose is. Well, I don't wonder. Is it to help offenders? No, it's to make money. Okay. Well, damn, I feel better. We're going to be back with more right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope.
Thank you, sir. Good to be back here in the Toyota Center. Good to go. Places on the
Hey, everybody, you want to be sure and join me next week for my special guest, Becky Harling, and her book, Freedom from Performing. It's a special book on how to not strive for perfection all the time, or to tailor our expectations of perfection to our lives and the reality in which we live. It's a great, great, uplifting book. Becky Harling will be here next week on The Journey of Hope. We've come to the end of another program, and this was kind of a cathartic experience for me today. I got some things off my chest that I've been thinking about for a long time. You could do the same. Don't forget, you can always email me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com, mathersrodney @yahoo.com. And I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on The Journey of Hope.